The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast. If you haven't listened before, we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me once again this week is founder of Car Dealer Magazine, James, the customer is always right, Baggett. James, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, John. I'm very good. Would you like an update on the BMW saga?
I would. Tell us about your soiled panniers.
Well, interestingly, BMW heard our podcast, John. So they listened to our podcast last week.
That's one listener, isn't it? So that's good.
Excellent. Yeah. Plus one. They listened to it intently because it was quite ferocious feedback, wasn't it? Unfortunately. But they called me on Saturday and Sunday, but I missed both those calls. But they called me back on Monday. This was the sales manager who was very upset at the experience that I had. And has promised to put it right. So he's going to be sending a new pannier down with the salesman who's going to drive down to Gosport and do a full handover of my bike, as they should have done in the showroom at my home. He was very, very apologetic and said it was not what BMW Park Lane is all about. And they wanted to put it right, which is a very nice thing. I'm glad they listened to the podcast and took the feedback on board and is going to fix it. So yes, that's the update on that. But the other headache I've had, which hasn't been so successful, John.
Oh, don't say planning applications.
The EV charging saga has continued this week. I've spent even more, many hours talking to the local council about why they've charged me £570 when it actually should have been £270. And it meant speaking to a man on a help desk on a national planning portal who seemed to be very angry. I was asking him many questions about the planning application, but I think it's sorted. So now I've got to wait 8 weeks to see if I'm allowed one. Mostly that has been my headaches this week. How have you been, John?
I've been fine. I don't have anything as exciting as that to talk about. I will just say, I think you're quite measured in your feedback of BMW last week. So I don't think
that was good, because yeah, you know me well, and I'm not normally measured in my...
No, I don't think you are. I think you would have... It's quite measured for you to not, you know, for want of a better word, explode at them on the spot. So I think it was good that you, you know, got on the bike and came home and then thought, that wasn't a very good experience. But yes, good news that they've put it right. And I will say on the planning applications for EV chargers, I mean, I know this doesn't apply to everyone, but, you know, we are citing, or lots of publications do cite planning permission as a big problem in elevating us to the next step of zero emissions travel.
Well, the thing with this one is I'm doing it myself rather than paying an architect to do all the drawings.
So yeah, and I sort of feel you don't need an architect to draw you a plan for a box that you can buy off the shelf.
But what you do need is someone who can help you navigate the planning portal, which is incredibly difficult for something that should be very, very simple. I must say, bit of a caveat, I do live in a listed building, so that is why it's so difficult. But that is my fault. But I didn't realise it would be quite so tough. Anyway,
news on that soon. I will move us on from planning applications and introduce our guest. Our guest this week is Pete Withers, founder of Auto Engage. Welcome, Pete.
Hello, thanks for having me.
No problem.
Lovely to have you on. So, just to get us started, tell us a little bit about Auto Engage. What do you do?
Okay, so AutoEngage is a motor trade sales and marketing platform that primarily concentrates on customer reactivation, review generation, and inbound lead management. Set up by myself back in COVID, As a lot of us found when we went into COVID, we, you know, a lot of time on our hands, what have you. And I've been in the motor trade pretty much all my life, since 1994 in one guise or another. Worked for main dealers, worked for a BMW dealer. And I've had my own sites, and I've also managed independent sites. I've always had an interest, primarily from having my own sites, in the marketing aspect of the retail motor trade. And whilst running my own sites, there was always an awful lot of jobs that needed doing. But quite often, due to time constraints, you know, didn't get done. And that was mainly sort of previous customer follow-up, the management of inbound leads coming into the business. I mean, back in the day, we'd write them on post-it notes, which obviously with GDPR now are a big no-no. And so, yeah, as I say, when COVID came along, I'd always sort of thought that, you know, that there must be another way of doing it. So with the time that I found myself having in COVID, I thought, right, well, you know, let's have a look and see what we can do. And the first validation for the platform came when I pretty much sketched it out on a piece of A4 paper and showed it to a friend and colleague of mine who, thankfully, he could sort of see the idea straight away. I would say that he is fairly technologically challenged, and I don't mean that in a derogatory sense, but he was the first sort of litmus test, because I knew that if he could see the idea behind it, then, you know, we would be, we'd have something to work on. So I started to build out the platform, realized that theory and reality are often confused as the same thing, but are completely the opposite. The initial development that I thought was going to take 6 months took 2.5 years. Thankfully, got a very understanding wife and family that, you know, supported me straight from the start and continued to support me. And now I'm really pleased to say that we have a product that delivers a real genuine result for motor traders, can show them a near return investment, return rather on investment right from the start. In fact, you know, quite a few of the dealers that go on to try it, because we offer a free trial, actually are in profit before they've paid us anything. So we generate them leads that they can go on to sell, you know, new vehicles to within the trial, which then obviously helps them to make their decision with regards to progressing further with it.
The
Sorry,
Pete, I was just going to say, it sounds like what you do is re-engaging with customers that dealers have already had. It's very similar to how I bought my bike. You know, I mean, I know it didn't turn into the best experience afterwards, but actually the way I actually bought it was off the back of a salesman ringing me up and saying, you're coming towards the end of your deal, James. Do you fancy a new one? We need to get one over the line for September. We can give you a really good offer for your current bike and get you into a new one. And I was the perfect person for that. I mean, it's more of a toy rather than a commuting vehicle. And it was I like the idea of having something new. And the fact that they re-engaged with me and picked up the phone and offered me that meant that they did the deal. So I'm sure you probably get many, many dealers who are probably missing an opportunity when it comes to this sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, I wouldn't be as arrogant to say that this will never happen, but certainly every trial that we do generates results that really open the eyes from a dealer's point of view. And yeah, exactly as you've just mentioned, it's, you know, previous customers are by far one of your best sources of new business. The reason being is that you've done a lot of the hard work up front. You know, the first sale is always the hardest sale, and I think it goes right back to When I first started selling cars in 1994, I worked for a Renault dealer, and then, as mentioned, went to work for a BMW dealer. And if you think back, you know, all that long time ago, we didn't have what we have now with regards to the internet and that sort of thing, which opened up the whole country, you were very localized within your selling. And so what had to be done then, you had to make the most of what you had at the time, which was obviously previous customers. So I was certainly, when I first started selling cars, that, you know, your current customers were by far one of your best, sources of repeat business. And that's still the case today. It is. I can pretty much confidently say that if we re-engaged 50 previous customers from a dealer, that they will, from those 50 customers, there'll be between 3 and 5, 6 really good leads in there where people will literally respond, yes, I'm actually thinking of changing, what have you got? And, you can go then straight into a really warm conversation. Very, very similar to, as you've just mentioned, with the motorbike you bought.
There'll be a lot of dealers listening to this who think, well, we already do this. We've got a CMS, we go for it regularly and we talk to those prospects. I mean, it is, as you rightly pointed out, a very major source of business for dealers. Just perhaps explain to those people how your product does this differently and how it can help dealers that might be thinking that they need some assistance.
Okay, so what it does is, it's really interesting what you've just mentioned, actually, because I had a demonstration with a main dealer who've got a very intricate CMS system, and that they were interested to pretty much, as you've just said, see how it could help them. So 50 of their previous customers that they selected at random, we put them through the system, it generated some leads. They then cross-referenced that as to what they had in their CMS system, and the live conversations that we were having with customers, which was via SMS, was actually completely different as to what had been put in the CMS system with regards to when this customer should next be followed up. And there was a couple of instances at that. So I think, from the dealers that think that they've, potentially got it covered off, it's a really good eye opener, because it certainly opened, this dealer's eyes that what had been inputted into their system by their salespeople wasn't necessarily what the customer, was coming back with.
When you decided to launch the business during COVID, what was it that made you decide this is where you wanted to spend your time and effort? Because, I mean, it clearly has been a lot of effort. 2.5 years of development is an awful long period of time.
Yes, I mean, don't get me wrong. At the time, I thought it was going to be 6 months and, away we go. And, literally you build it and they will come type scenario. And, it certainly wasn't that. But it was one of those things that I'd always... It had always been a project that I'd wanted to do, and it's modern life is always so busy anyway. So you sort of always, quite often have thoughts and think, well, I'll do that tomorrow, I'll do that tomorrow, and tomorrow never comes. But with COVID, tomorrow did come. And so, it was something that, as I say, I'd been wanting to do for a long time. And I think the fact that I'm a motor trader first and then a marketer second, i.e., I'm not a marketer that's built something for the motor trade without, a good degree of knowledge of the motor trade. I always wanted to build something that had, a genuine use, that when dealers used it, they could see the return on investment straight away.
Well, I wish you the best of luck with it. It sounds like a really, really interesting project. So thanks for giving us the update on that. John, shall we crack on with our stories?
Yes. So if you haven't listened before, James and I have chosen our favourite stories from the Car Dealer website this week. We don't know what each other has chosen, and we're going to have a chat about each story as we go through. At the end, Pete gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. If you want to play along, you can X at Car Dealer Mag and let us know if you think we've missed anything. James, you won last week, didn't you? So you're going to go first.
Thank you, John. Lots of good stories on the website this week. It is results season, isn't it? It's the towards the end of September is when we start seeing lots of big results from lots of businesses, including car dealers, but also suppliers. And I've got quite a few of those on my list this week, but I'm going to start with the biggest one of the week, which was Sytner Group's results. So Sytner, over the last few years, has been vying for the top place in the car dealer top 100, our list of the most profitable car dealers. And it looks like, I can't confirm it yet because that list hasn't come out, but it looks like from this recent set of results, Sytner might go number one. So for 2022, they clocked up profits of £178.9 million. Just let that sink in for the moment. An incredible result for that business. That was on revenues, which were of nearly £7 billion, up £1.1 billion on the year before. So huge numbers. Arnold Clark has always been top of our list since we launched it. But their recent results showed that their profit before tax had fallen to £173.5 million from £263 million the year before. So quite a dramatic fall for Arnold Clark. Sytner, on the other hand, have managed to keep their profit figures reasonably stable. The year before, they'd made very, very similar numbers to the £178.9 million. They've actually improved on it very, very slightly this year. Sytner have got an incredible portfolio of brands, some incredible dealerships. We went to their Audi West London site not that long ago, didn't we, John? And were frankly blown away by it. And it wasn't until after we left that show and I realized they own the Mercedes one next door, which is equally massive. And I'd quite like to have a look around that one too. So Sytner, those results, very, very impressive. Looks like they will go top of the car dealer top 100. This year, UHY Hacker Young are doing the numbers for us, and that will be coming out in the next couple of weeks. But we've been very busy looking through lots of results, but this one was the one that I'd been waiting for. And impressive to see, Darren Edwards leads an amazing business there. They are top by turnover by quite some way, and looks like now top by profit. During the year, they bought, which we have reported on, the BMW and Mini dealers in Stevenage, Luton and Tring, and also those five Mercedes dealerships and three after-sales sites in North London, which I think includes that one next to the Audi West London showroom. So very, very impressive results there, John, and ones that a lot of people will be looking on very enviably at, because that is an incredible result.
So if you were to hypothesize for a moment, Jez, what do you think has seen Arnold Clark's profits dip? I'm sure we wrote a story about this, but I'll level with you. I haven't read it, or if I did, it was quite a while ago. But is it Arnold Clark has quite an... Well, they're both quite diverse businesses, aren't they? But I feel that Arnold Clark has slightly more on the car supermarket front than Sytner. Sytner, of course, has Car Shop, doesn't it?
Yes.
But that was an industry, a bit of the industry that was hit quite hard by used car pricing increases and supply issues and all that sorts of stuff. Do you think that's had an impact?
Well, looking back at those results from Arnold Clark, they said that they were hit by a number of significant increases in underlying operational costs. That's not unusual. All of the reports I've been reading over the last few weeks have said that people have been hit by high utility, energy bills, and also those rising interest rates, which have made their cost of borrowing go up quite dramatically. Those results for Eddie at Arnold Clark are still very impressive. They were their second best results ever. And you remember last year, he told us that 2021 would be, as he described it, a Carlsberg year for the motor trade. It really was incredibly impressive. But they are, as you say, very much focused on used cars. They've got a much more diverse mix of brands, Arnold Clark, whereas Sytner are right up there with the high-end manufacturers. I mean, they've got Bugatti. They've just started working with Pagani. They operate with Ferrari, Porsche, Aston Martin, McLaren. These are lots of manufacturers that had long order banks. So they've probably seen a result of people ordering the cars the year before and those finally dropping into the numbers being delivered. So I think that is why we've seen these big numbers in big improvement in their sales. They added £800 million of car sales in 2022. But I think it is the fact that they have got a fantastic mix of very, very profitable brands. You know, these big luxury marques are selling cars still. People are still buying those high-end products and quite clearly doing so profitably for people like Sytner.
Interesting. Well, well done, Sitna. And I look forward to our top 100 list coming soon.
Me too. Right, over to you.
Okie dokie. I will resist the urge to talk about the P word. I'm going to go to Vauxhall, which is a story from our colleague Ted, who is on the launch of the lightly refreshed new Corsa. And Vauxhall is said to be targeting Fiesta owners. I mean, that's nothing new, is it? But they are explicitly targeting Fiesta owners as they hope to make the Corsa 2024's most popular new car. So, of course, for the uninitiated, the Fiesta is no longer on sale. Vauxhall has called this decision to axe, you know, their most popular car interesting, which I thought was an interesting way of putting it.
Sort of diplomatic, but not diplomatic. Yeah,
interesting way of doing it. But they reckon that despite Ford's best efforts, Ford are not going to get every single Fiesta customer into a Puma, as much money as they might be willing to throw at them to do so on deals and so on. Because the Puma is quite a bit more expensive than a Fiesta. And a lot of people don't particularly necessarily want that shape of car, you know, this sort of high riding SUV-ish type thing. So Vauxhall are going to put quite a lot of effort into marketing at Fiesta owners in hope that the Corsa will rise to the top of the sales charts. So they reckon that the B segment hatch, which is, you know, the Corsa and the Fiesta and so on, is still very important, accounting for 20% of sales. And they just don't buy that everyone wants an SUV, which I think is quite an interesting take, because so many manufacturers are now, well, okay, Ford was the first, but a lot of manufacturers are said to be dipping out of this particular segment. You know, we've heard rumors that VW are, well, I think VW themselves have rumoured that the Polo is probably not going to be here much longer. In another bit of news this week, the Up, which is the segment below, has just stopped being on sale.
Yeah.
There's lots of manufacturers are not that interested in B-segment hatches anymore, or hatchbacks in general. They think everyone wants a crossover. So it's refreshing to me to see a manufacturer that's still going, nope, we're going to keep making this because people still want to buy it.
They've got a lot of work to do, though, to get to be number one, haven't they? They're currently 10th. The Corsa's 10th best-selling car so far this year with 22,000 registered. I mean, that is a lot of
new. Where's the Puma out of interest? Is that in the same list?
Puma is number one or two, isn't it? I mean, isn't it behind Qashqai? Aren't they the two that are fighting for number one at the moment?
They do have a lot of work to do, but the Corsa does have a few tricks up its sleeve, one of which is that there's this electric version of it, which, okay, at the minute doesn't feel like the most desirable product perhaps, but that is catering to a segment of the market that the Puma and Qashqai and so on at the minute can't cater to. So it's got quite a broad appeal, we could say.
I do agree with him that not everybody wants an SUV. There is a lot of people that start off in motoring in a smaller car, aren't they? And you know, my first car was a Fiesta, and I'm sure many other people's first car was a Fiesta. And it meant that I was as it went on throughout my life, I was a bit more of a Ford man than I was a Vauxhall man. I think you sort of have that allegiance.
I've never known that about you, James.
You have that sort of allegiance, don't you, after you've had your first car. And I know many people who are the other way, who had a Corsa or a Nova, it was at the time, you know, as their first vehicle, and they're now Vauxhall fans. Pete, what do you think? Do you think SUVs are popular or going to be continuing to be as popular as they have been? And do you think this guy's right?
I think SUVs obviously become a lot more popular, but I think Ford, you know, have dropped the ball a little bit. Quite honestly, you know, getting rid of the Fiesta, I certainly do, because I always kind of look at it. If you look at what you would class as a small car today, so Vauxhall Corsa, Ford Fiesta, and you look at the size of them compared to, you know, the original Ford Fiestas and Vauxhall Corsas that we remember, but you know, they're a much bigger car. I mean, a Corsa now is pretty much the size probably of a, you know, an original Astra. So yeah, I think Vauxhall have been really clever in what they're going to do. And I don't know. I wonder whether, you know, somebody in the Ford Towers somewhere is sitting there thinking, I think we've dropped the ball a little bit here.
I agree with you. I really do agree with you. I am surprised that they killed off the Fiesta. I really am. I know that they're reasoning behind it, but it was such a popular car. And has been at the top of the sales charts for so long.
Mm.
I was staggered by it.
Mm. If I can put my nerdy hat on for a moment, I think it was apparent that the Fiesta was killed off as a last minute decision as well, because they'd only just introduced a facelift for it. There was a facelift in, I don't know, 2021 or something. Or not even that long. I think it might have been a year. So there's a handful of these facelifted Fiestas knocking about, the last ones to be sold. So they put all the effort into re-engineer various bits of it, the front end and the touchscreen or something or other, and then they've just pulled the plug on it. So it just didn't seem to me like that was a quiet run out. It was we'll get rid of that to free up factory space for whatever it is they want to build in that plant next sort of thing. It was a very sudden decision, I think.
Yeah, no, I was surprised. I was definitely surprised. I think a lot of people in the motor trade was too when it happened.
Mm.
Right, shall I move us on, John,
from yes.
Fiestas and Coursas to more results? I'm afraid I'm quite Financial Times heavy this week, but that's because there's...
Making the most of your subscription, are you?
I am. I have not got a subscription to the Financial Times. Anyway, I'm going to start with this story about CarWow. So this is online marketplace CarWow increasing their losses in 2022 to £29.4 million. Accounts just filed for the marketplace, which does still supply new car leads to dealers, but also has this Sell Your Car platform, which it bought, I think, last year, which has now been heavily embedded into the business. They say their revenues last year were up to £39.9 million from £36.6 million in 2021. But its losses, they say, came as a result of increased investment in that new car and used car offerings that it has. This is in its annual report that was filed at Company's House this week. So gross profit, it says, for the year was up £3.5 million to £39.6 million, but that loss before tax was £29.4 million. So quite a considerable sum there. But I will give them the right of reply. And we did speak to their new CEO, didn't we, John? Mike Manis, a couple of weeks ago on the podcast. He said that they are investing heavily in the website. He did say in a statement to us about these results that 2022 was a year of turbulence for the whole automotive industry due to well-documented global factors, he said. And he said CarWow was not immune to those headwinds. There was also a number of significant planned investments to broaden CarWow's offering with both its customers and partners. And these included developing its Sell My Car service and some extensive investments in its OEM media product. I picked this story, John, because there's a lot of people that who look on at CarWow in the motor trade industry. And I mean, they've clearly made huge waves in the industry, and they've made a great name for themselves. But they have over the years had some difficult conversations, let's say, with manufacturers and dealers. So people pay very, very close attention to these results. There'll be some people looking at those losses thinking they are quite considerable, and will probably be a little bit worried about them. But it's interesting to hear CarWow's side of the story about why they say they've made those big losses. And they've saying so far for 2023, revenue is up, and they're targeting 50 million this year, so up £10 million. Did you see those results, John? What were your thoughts?
I did literally just now as you were reading them. I think it is tempting to look at 121% increase in losses after tax and think, but it's you have to view it in the context of a tech company, don't you? This is what I'm not very good at doing. And that's sort of what tech companies do. They like to reinvest at the detriment of profit, almost, don't they? Yeah. Until they're happy with the position that they're in, and they almost carry on ad infinitum, really, don't they? You like Amazon, for not to keep using Amazon as an example of a tech company, but Amazon made losses for years and years and years and years. May still be doing, I don't know, until it reaches the point where it's infiltrated every corner of your shopping experience. So probably it's a similar sort of thing. They will just keep investing and investing in
Tesla
platforms and all this sort of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, I just, I find it, but you can imagine there's a lot of people who pay very close attention to these sorts of results. And that was a very popular story on our website with dealers this week who were clearly very interested to see how they got on.
I do find it incredible, despite this, though, I do find it incredible the amount of money that we're talking about here for what is, in effect, a company with, apart from probably some offices and obviously some staff, not really that much in the way of overheads, you would think. You know, like we say, the money is to be made in tech, isn't it, as a middleman, really, because that's where you don't have to invest in people and places in quite the same way, and stock and all this sort of stuff. But yes, I don't really have anything more intelligent to say about that.
No, I mean, they have invested in Spain and Germany, two markets that have added considerable revenue. Germany added nearly £12 million, Spain £3 million to their numbers. And the other hugely popular thing they have is the YouTube channel, fronted by Matt Watson. It's now the most watched car channel in the world, they said. It was 7.8 million subscribers at the end of 2022. And I actually know it's a lot higher than that now. So they've clearly made huge waves, haven't they, on social media too. And, you know, largely thanks to Matt Watson's hard work there on that front. Pete, what do you think? I mean, what do you think of Carwow coming from the motor trade side?
Yeah, I think with regards to their losses, I think, yeah, it's a big number perhaps for the layman on the street, but obviously the people behind the scenes will be looking at it and thinking, you know, yeah, it is a big number, but in the grand scheme of things, a drop in the ocean, there's, you know, a huge amount of tech companies that have huge valuations, but, you know, don't make a profit and, you know, make some quite considerable losses. I mean, Uber, for argument's sake, a company that you would think is, you know, really mega profitable, because going back to what John said again, you know, very much a portal. They don't really own anything, do they? They don't own the taxis that they just provide the service. But I think 2022 lost something like $9 billion. I mean, when you look at the 29 million that Carwow have posted, that is a mere drop in the ocean compared to Uber. And I think, you know, a lot of it is on the future potential for profit is the way that they look at it from a, you know, from an investment point of view. What can that business potentially do in the future? And I think probably what they're looking at doing is getting a huge market share to begin with, and then once they've got that, using that as the base, then to propel themselves forward and actually make the profit.
What did John say when he spoke to us on the podcast a couple of weeks back, John? He was talking about how he wanted to become a destination for car buyers, didn't he? He wanted people to start their journey on Carwow. And if they had a car to buy, it meant they had a car to sell. And that's how he sees this organically growing.
Vertical integration. Well, it's not really vertical integration, is it? But yes, by all ends of the car buying journey, which, to be fair, sounds like a radical thing, but actually that's no different to, you go to a dealer, they take your car off you, they give you a new car. So, yeah, I can see the logic in that compared to Auto Trader, for example, where, to be fair, you can sell your car on Auto Trader. It's just not quite such an easy thing to do, is it? Because someone has to come and buy it off you.
We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Well, there you go. Story number two for me. Over to you.
Lovely. I will go political for my next story, because it's also the season of party conferences, isn't it? But what I will drill down to is the news that Labour will reimpose the 2030 ban on new petrol and diesels if it wins the next general election. That's the headline of this story. I don't find the headline and that particular news piece particularly worthy of discussion, because I sort of think, what is the point? Well, I suppose I am discussing it now. But, you know, we've discussed...
It's sort of the point of the podcast, isn't it?
Well, Labour make the point that there's no point in getting rid of the 2030 ban when there's still the ZEV, I've forgotten the word, ZEV mandate. Targets to hit. Mandate, thank you. In effect, it's a ban without calling it a ban, isn't it? You've still got to hit 80% EVs by 2030 anyway. So in a way, you might as well still have the 2030 ban. So cynically, I'm going to say reintroducing the ban, as they wish to do in 2030, is not really a very difficult thing to do. And it's a sort of a bit like the Conservatives removing it is just a cheap, easy promise to do that sounds like a bigger thing than it actually is. But interesting they want to do that, but I'm more interested in other things to do with EVs that they want to do. So they want to cut planning regulations around EV chargers, James Bagger.
Oh, that'd be handy.
Yes, exactly. Because it's that sort of thing that is going to stop us from reaching net zero. And also around gigafactories and all this sort of stuff, which I don't know how much of the fact that we haven't got any gigafactories apart from one coming in Somerset. I don't know how much of that is down to planning issues as opposed to people not actually wanting to invest in the country. But, you know, every little helps, doesn't it? And I think there's some other bits in here to do with EV charging. So at least there's some sort of hints in here about getting us towards 100% EVs by 2030, as they wish to do, by means other than simply banning everything else.
Can you imagine being in the planning department of a manufacturer, though, reading this story, thinking, right, okay, we now don't have the ban in 2030, it's now 2035. Oh no, if Labour gets into power, it's coming back again. I mean, you would be tearing your hair out, wouldn't you?
I know, and it's interesting. Well, yeah, they say it will create certainty for the car industry. I think we'd be so beyond certainty for the car industry, aren't we? And the other thing for me is, all of these statements from Labour or Conservatives or, you know, talking about certainty for the car industry, assume that somehow the car industry is only looking at the UK for its actual markets. We're a sliver, really, aren't we, in terms of global car sales? A significant sliver, but still a sliver. So us faffing around with the deadline doesn't really change what most of these manufacturers are going to do anyway. If Mini have decided that they're going to stop producing petrol cars by 2030 or earlier, they're still going to do it. They're not going to carry on making them just for us, are they? So it's a bit of the politics involved is a bit frustrating. But I just thought it was interesting that they've decided to go the opposite way.
Just before we go to Pete for his comments on this one, I'm just going to segue us on nicely to my next story, which sort of fits in this, and then we'll get Pete's opinion on it. So this is car dealers saying that they support delaying the 2030 ban, but remain unaware of that ZEV mandate. This is data collected by Autotrader this week, saying that 75% of automotive retailers think Rishi Sunak made the right call in pushing the ban back to 2035. 75% is quite some margin, isn't it? They said they found that independent dealers were actually most in favour of watering down those measures, with 85% of respondents in the used car sector agreeing with the delay. And just a fifth of franchise dealers said they were in favour of sticking to that original plan. The other interesting thing here was that many of them didn't actually know what the ZEV mandate meant. Dealers said they, despite the fact they thought the government had made the right call, more than half, 60%, said they weren't aware that the controversial ZEV mandate will be remaining in place. These are car dealers that sell cars and are going to have to do this next year that the Autotrader are talking to, and they don't understand what's going on. And I just think this survey, I'm unsure how many people they spoke to. I'm sure it's in here. Sure, it's in here somewhere. But they normally Autotrader talk to a couple of thousand people and they do these surveys. It's amazing that the industry really doesn't understand what's going on.
Yes. And it's frustrating that it's frustrating for me that this, as we've said, politicized ban date, which is separate entirely, that seems to be the message that's got through.
Yeah.
That's the really annoying thing. But it is really complicated, all of this stuff. That's the thing. And probably the headlines were all around the ban, weren't they? You know, no newspaper has really talked about the ZEV mandate.
No. Which is effectively the same thing.
Well, it is in effect the same thing, yeah. Yeah, Pete, frustrating.
What did you think to all of this?
Well, I think if I remain dealer and they, you know, the talk of putting it back to 2035, but then looking at the ZEV mandate, I mean, I think it's something like they've got to do 80%, haven't they, of the vehicles that a manufacturer's got to do 80% of the vehicles that they sell by 2030 have got to be EV. And the fines that will be imposed, I think I read somewhere, it's like £15,000 per unit that they missed their target by. Well, it's not effectively really the manufacturer that sells vehicles, is it? It's the dealers. So that's then going to be forced down onto the dealers. So they're obviously going to be feeling that pressure with regards to having to sell these vehicles. But the problem potentially you've got with the pushback to 2035 is that the, you know, the private person on the street is going to be thinking, well, I've got another 5 years now before I've really got to think about it. And, you know, let's be honest. Human behavior is, you know, we'll put this off till tomorrow. We'll put this off till tomorrow, which is essentially the 20s, 25, 35 thing. And all I can see is that the dealers are going to get the pressure put on them because, you know, obviously from the manufacturers with regards to the fines that could potentially be imposed, but they're going to have a harder job than selling it to the people, you know, that they need to sell the vehicles to, because in their mindset, they've got until 2035 to deal with it.
That's quite right, actually, because we're going to, yeah, there's going to be a very strange situation in 2030 where, assuming Labour don't get in or don't put this through, where a customer walks into a Mercedes dealer, say, wanting a petrol E-Class, and the dealer's got to convince them that actually they don't want a petrol E-Class, and this person probably really does want a petrol E-Class. So there's a strange thing of balancing those two needs, isn't there? Who are you going to let this sale walk away?
I think, John, that next year is going to be where the real trouble is going to happen, because 20% of those sales they're going to have next year have got to be EVs at a time, just a few months after the government said, don't worry, we're delaying this for another 5 years. But at the same time, those manufacturers and dealers have got to hit those 20% targets. We know EV demand is in the new car market, especially private retail customers, has dropped off a cliff. So it's going to be very, very hard next year to persuade those customers to buy EVs at a time when they think they've just bought themselves another 5 years. I think it's going to be tough. Right. Shall I move us on?
I think it's me, isn't it? You've just sunk in a story. Thank
really?
You.
Oh, I did. Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you. Sorry. Right, I'll let you move us on.
I'm gonna wedge in Pendragon now.
Good.
So there's been some news on Pendragon. One thing is, I believe there's a vote has been scheduled for one of the particular bids, the Lithia bid. So on October 25th, which is 12 days away, Pendragon shareholders will be voting on that, unless anything else exciting happens in the meantime. But we have heard rumours that AutoNation, who are the remaining other bidder in this particular plot, they're plotting an increased bid, which could go as high as 38p a share. And just for comparison, Lithia Motors are offering 34.5p a share. So quite a bit more, and that would see Pendragon valued above 500 million. So it's just watch and wait, really, isn't it? But I thought this is an incredible jump, really, in share price that they're willing to pay. I don't know what your thoughts are, James.
Well, I think if we were going to see this bid, we would have probably seen it by now. It's getting very late in the day for AutoNation to make that bid. But this was a very strong rumor in the Sunday papers, wasn't it, that where it was reported that AutoNation are plotting this. Bill Berman used to work for AutoNation. They're the biggest dealer group in the States. So I think it's likely that we'll see something. But if it doesn't come for Pendragon, they've put a marker in the sand that they're interested in the UK. We've got the Canadians just buying Lookers. That deal was completed in the last couple of weeks. Lookers disappeared from the stock market this week, sadly, and went into...
That'd be for you, because you like looking at the results.
I do, yeah. Very sadly for me, but yes. So they've disappeared back into private hands. You've got Lithia's bid that if it goes through for Pendragon. That will be one business falling into American hands. They're going to put it together with Jardine, creating a huge group in the UK. AutoNation will be thinking, hang on a minute, I need to get in on the action here. At the same time, we've had Penske Automotive, owner of Sytner, which we've already talked about how successful they've been here in the UK. They've pulled out of their bid to buy Pendragon. But why is that? I mean, are they thinking about buying something else? I mean, clearly they were interested in increasing their business here. They've been very, very successful. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see some news from Penske soon. And so you've got these two big American businesses that are desperate to buy something here in the UK. There's only a couple of people left, isn't there? I mean, Virtue, as we've said before, is a sitting duck. I think it's only a matter of time before we see a bid for them. And if AutoNation don't go for Pendragon, we don't see an increased offer, then I'm sure that Robert Forrester's team at Virtue will be assessing a bid from somebody else very, very soon after that. So yeah, it's an absolutely fascinating time in the listed car dealer world, isn't it?
Yes. And apart from this, a strangely quiet week. As you say, it was all hotting up, wasn't it, for the last few weeks. We've had nothing else to talk about. But yes, this was on Sunday or something, so we've not really, and it wasn't really an actual move, was it? It was just reported in the papers, as you say.
Yeah, and I think if it was going to happen, it would have happened this week.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I think there's still more to play out in the listed dealer world, that's for sure. Pete, what did you think of all these bids that have been flying in? I mean, are you as sad as I am when it comes to seeing these businesses disappear from the stock market?
Oh yeah, 100%. And I think it's crazy times, really, when you think about it, isn't it? How, the groups are getting sort of swallowed up and what have you. I mean, it goes back to, if I go back to when I first started in the trade, you know, a lot of these big groups, you know, weren't around then. I mean, if we look at Sytner's, for argument's sake, that you've mentioned, I remember dealing with them 25 years ago when they had two dealerships, one in Nottingham and one in Leicester. I mean, they were the main Alpina dealers at the time, and you could tell at the time when you dealt with them, they were, you know, they were almost like the film stars of the BMW network, because they were, you know, were really well known. So I can see why they've done so well. But I think, yeah, I think it is, you know, it is a shame. And I also think as well, it's, you know, going back to when a lot of dealerships were sort of owner driven dealerships, so not part of big groups. I think, you know, the whole evolution, there is a lot of shame in there, but I think it'd be interesting to see what happens with Pendragon. I'm no expert by any means, but I think it will go right down to the wire. It will be, and I think there'll be, you know, there will be a shock surprise somewhere in there.
Yeah, I hope so, because it makes it fun to write about. Right, I'll move us on, John, and I'm just going to talk about the Used Car Awards, which are coming up not too far away on Monday, November the 27th. On Monday of this week, though, we announced our nominations list. So this is the first cut of all those thousands of dealers that have put their names forward. It takes a huge amount of time from our judging panel to go through them all. We look at all of the entries. In detail, we assess every single business, looking at their online scores on the likes of Google, Auto Trader, and other platforms, to whittle them down to that first list. So there's 10 in the categories. We've got 23 awards this year, John. I think we have lots of them.
A lot.
Lots of exciting news on the night. But now the fun starts. Our mystery shopping has already begun. It's a huge job for us, the whole team. And we take it incredibly seriously, as you know, the mystery shopping side of things. If we're going to put our name to these used car dealers being the best of the best, we want to make sure they really are. So after we've done those online reviews and that first cut of the list, they go into this mystery shopping phase. Even Mike Brewer himself does it. So if you hear a cheeky chappy ringing you up on the phone,
he does put on a voice though.
Then make sure you treat him well. But yeah, we're doing that as we speak. And the shortlist, which is the names that go forward for that big event on the 27th of November, will be released a week on Monday. So that is the 23rd of October. So it's been a It gives us a bit of a headache, John, doesn't it, the used car wars, because there is so much data all in a massive spreadsheet that we have to all go through. But it's definitely worth it. It's the biggest event that we do of the year. 600 odd dealers coming to the brewery in London. It's always a great night and a lot of fun. But it's the work that goes into it beforehand always gives me a bit of a headache.
Yes. I mean, it is ultimately worth it, isn't it?
Yeah. Like,
when you, not just because we get to have a glass of wine here and there, because we have quite a busy evening.
Yes, we do.
Not. But yeah, to see the faces of people winning, you know, or being highly commended, it is a joy to see.
Yeah, it is. And it's sort of the start of Christmas for us, isn't it?
Because
it's
absolutely. Yeah. Albeit a month early. But yes, I like to pretend that's where Christmas starts. Get to go early.
Well, I just certainly relax a little bit afterwards, but there'll be a lot of dealers that will be waiting by their phones and emails over the next week or so as the mystery shopping begins. So I just wanted to say best of luck to everybody nominated, and keep an eye out for that shortlist coming out in a couple of weeks.
Absolutely.
Right.
Shall I move us on?
Please do.
I'm going to go for a whimsical Tomorrow's Worldish story now.
Are you?
I am, which is something that I actually wrote. I wrote some words. So this is news that brain scanning tech will be coming to a Nissan dealer near you, possibly. Possibly. So I went on a very, James is laughing at me. I went on a very, very strange event. Well, not a very strange event. I went to a Formula E event with Nissan a few weeks ago. And one of the little workshops that they did was around brain scanning and, well, more interestingly, brain stimulation. So what they were doing with their Formula E drivers was they were putting these funny little headsets on them, one of which was a brain scanner that told them what their brain activity looked like. I just saw a big graph, to be honest with you. But the other one was this sort of brain stimulation thing. And it was a weird looking headset, which you'll see if you go onto the store on our website.
Yeah. That is basically what was making me laugh, because it does look like a Donald Trump style mullet, doesn't it?
Yeah. But made of plastic. Yeah. So this particular thing uses either electricity or electromagnetic waves to kind of tickle your brain, as it were, into being a bit more awake. And the idea is that this will then stimulate your brain to be able to receive and retain new information a bit more easily. So in the context of Formula E, they've been putting it on their heads and then they've been going off to learn a new track, say, because there's so many tracks for Formula E and Formula One, that they have to constantly try and learn the best corners, best way to go around it. And I don't understand racing, you get the idea. But the guy who's in charge of this particular program, who is actually a user experience guru for Nissan, so he's worked for Nissan for 12 years or something in Japan, and he decided to get into this brain scanning technology. He wants to use this in different guises across the business. So one of the things he wants to do is get this into dealerships. The idea being that, as we know, new cars are a little bit complicated. They get more and more complicated every year. There's new technology on them, whether that is manufacturers trying to put enormous touchscreens in to control the heating and ventilation and everything, or it's, you know, lots of new safety tech going on, like, why is this car steering me back into my lane when I don't want it to? All this sort of stuff. They all have a lot more tech on them. And for customers, that's a bit of a big ask sometimes. You know, like, to use your example of your handover, James, there's quite a lot to actually go through now on a new motorbike compared to perhaps one you were buying 5 years ago, even though it was identical. So the idea is they want to put these strange headsets in dealerships. I'm not quite sure at what point in the sales process they say, can we zap your brain now? and they put it on your head. But they want to trial it and put it on people's heads so that they retain information a bit better. And they are therefore more able to retain information about this new car, whether it's the adaptive cruise control or the whatever it is. James, for the record, is laughing his head off at this, but I think it's very interesting.
Oh my God.
So it will start in dealerships in the US is the idea, because that's where this
takes place. Will it?
It will, apparently. Will it? Yes. That's right, yes. You John, won't be laughing in 5 years' time, James.
Was this event you went to on April 1st?
No, it wasn't. No.
That is quite frankly the most bonkers story I've ever heard in my entire life. I mean, nobody's going to go into a dealership and say, oh, yeah, no, please put that plastic thing that's going to zap my brain on my head.
I mean, they do admit there is some, there are going to be some hurdles to overcome.
There are.
I mean, I imagine it will come just after you've tried to sell some Gardex products, etc. Yeah.
Would you like gap insurance? But please, firstly, can you just put this plastic helmet on first?
Yeah, I promise it won't make you more susceptible to upselling offers. But yeah, I thought it was quite interesting. And the other part of this is they've got these. Well, as these things come to market, they're looking at where they can perhaps integrate this brain scanning, well, okay, slightly more loosely, where they can integrate this brain scanning, brain activity tech into new cars. So, I mean, if you drive a new car at the minute, they're staring at your face, aren't they, your new car. It's checking whether you're alert. Like my car is constantly beeping at me. If I look over my shoulder, it says, driver distracted or whatever, all this sort of stuff. And it's checking whether you're holding the steering wheel when the self-driving adaptive cruise is on and all this sort of stuff. So, the idea is, could it be looking at your brain as you drive along to make sure you're alert, for example? Or could it be looking at how stressed you are at a particular junction, and could it then report that to the local council, who I assume will do nothing about it? That sort of thing. It's all coming down the pipeline, James.
Oh, it really is. Yeah.
You heard it here first.
Wow. Wow. Pete, would you be happy to have your brain zapped?
No. I'm wondering for the older, I shouldn't say older, but the more traditional motor traders, whether, you know, if I said, has it been developed in conjunction with Pendle? Because it seems to be, you know, the Pendle selling technique, which was rife in the 80s and 90s. I mean, they're probably looking at something like this and thinking, well, perfect. Yeah. And as John said, straight after you've tried to sell Gap and Gardex unsuccessfully, all of a sudden the customer is thinking all of those products are a great idea and away they go.
I should say other paint protection products are available.
BBC
like standards at all times.
I
think it's a case again of theory and reality, because I think possibly a great theory, but the actual reality of getting customers to do it, I'm not sure what the uptake is going to be. I'm sure there will be some, obviously, that would love to give it a go, the trailblazers out there, but it wouldn't be for me. I think I'd like to make my own decisions with them, and I appreciate how they've sort of packaged it up, but
when I look at the picture that we've used of the man wearing said device, he does look absolutely terrified.
Well, I can that's actually Sasha Fenestraz, one of their drivers. I can tell you that while you've got this on, you have to do nothing. You have to do nothing, but you can't fall asleep. So it's sort of a bit like meditation, where you're trying to think of nothing. Not that I've ever tried. So I think that might be part one of the problem of trying to get this to work.
John, a brilliant story.
Thank you.
I very much enjoyed that.
Over to you.
I'm actually out of stories now, I'm afraid, because you've nicked some of mine. So,
well, can I squeeze in one more then?
Well, please do.
Which I'm going to let you take over.
It's cheating.
Talk about our other podcast.
Thank you.
I might just let you do it because I can't be bothered.
Oh, well, that's very kind. A plug opportunity is very kind of you to do. Yeah, today we published our latest in the Car Dealer Inspiring Leaders podcast, was the chat with Mr. Stephen Eagle. Of the business that takes his own name, an incredible, incredible business and a great story. Turnover of 700 million at last count, with a profit of 20.6 million pounds for 2021, and the most recent accounts available. And I talked to him on our Inspiring Leaders podcast just about how he launched his business from one site in Milton Keynes when he joined the manufacturer sponsored program for Toyota. He'd worked in lots of different businesses before then and always wanted to launch his own. And from there, it's been a huge success story. Now the largest Toyota and Lexus retailer in Europe. He bought 10 sites from Marshall Motor Group, which will be reported on in July. Now taking the count to 44 businesses, all Toyota and Lexus. So I found the chat with him really, really fascinating. He's a lovely guy who's been very, very successful, works incredibly hard, and was telling his story about how others can get into the motor trade, and hopefully it will give them some inspiration of following in his footsteps and doing something similar. But thank you for the opportunity to plug that, John. You can find it on Spotify or Apple Podcasts by searching for the Car Dealer Inspiring Leaders Podcast.
Or indeed on our YouTube channel. Well, if that's the end of our stories, Pete, before we ask for your verdict, are there any stories you think we've missed?
No, I had written a small list, in fairness, and you've...
It's a level of preparation we're not used to on the podcast. I like it.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and in fairness, John, you have covered off pretty much all of the stories that I'd mentioned. Sorry, James. Obviously, James, you had covered off some as well that I'd written down, but... I don't think there was anything else that I'd sort of picked out that I thought that could be. Well, there's obviously lots of interesting stories on there, but the ones that I'd written down, you have all covered. I think possibly, actually, along the same lines of the the Vauxhall Corsa story. Obviously, VW have announced that they're going to get rid of the Up, which. Possibly not, so brand famous as the Ford Fiesta, but obviously, a consideration. Although they mentioned, didn't they, earlier, was it last month, that they're going to be definitely keeping the Golf and getting rid of the ID3 and ID4 models. And I think that was possibly a move that was, brought out after Ford decided what they're going to do with the Fiesta. I think that was a real good marketing ploy that was, to sort of stand tall and actually say, well, we're going to remain with the traditions. The Up, I'm sure, will cause some people some upset, but it's obviously nowhere near as popular perhaps as the Polo.
Yes, we're sort of entering a strange time, aren't we, where manufacturers are killing off cars that are still selling incredibly well. I think that's quite a rare, or maybe it's not that rare. Maybe the Escort was still selling very well when Ford killed it off and the Focus came along.
They've got super brand status as well, haven't they? I mean, even my 11-year-old daughter knows what a Ford Fiesta is. Now, whether that's because I've been in the motor trade all my life, but it's, if you said Ford Fiesta, there's an awful lot of people, regardless of whether they've had one. I mean, I've never had one as, personally as a car, but, there'll be huge amounts of people that know and recognise it. And I, again, perhaps I'm just getting old. That's, perhaps.
We all are.
But, yeah.
Johnson, I was just going to say, I think I probably know the answer, but I think you're going to have to tell us who you think's won.
Well, it is the Corsa story for me. That is the one that I'd put at the top of my list. Well, apologies, James. It is John.
Well, congratulations, John.
I accept. Thank you kindly. I thought you were going to say it was a brain scanner story, frankly, which was expertly written. But I'll take the Corsa, absolutely.
That was third on my list, in fairness, the brain scanner. Yeah.
Very good. Marvelous. Well, all that's left for me to say is thank you to Pete for judging today. It's been great to have you on, and best of luck with everything. Hope the 2.5 year gestation period is proving its worth now.
Yes.
Incidentally, James, you were number two with the Stephen Eagle.
Thank you.
I'll take
second place.
Lovely. Well,
or, thank you, or as it's otherwise known in this podcast, last.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you as well to James for coming on and talking about his planning application. And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you're listening on Spotify, swipe up now and vote on who you think won. If you want to check out the stories we've mentioned today, you can click the links in the notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk. Thanks again, and until next time, goodbye.